Hello!
And welcome to the Catchula of Hearts podcast.
Meow.
The Catching Kelsey podcast that asks the question, Xavi, are you ready for it?
Oh, that's cute!
It's good!
That's fun! Mm-hmm. I like that. That's a reference to popular culture.
Well, we are here to discuss the 2016 televised dating series, Catching Kelsey, starring NFL tight end Travis Kelsey of the Kansas City Chiefs. He is, of course, all over the world right now, the Kansas City Chiefs Super Bowl champions. My name is Max Quinn. Joining me, as always, in this podcast feed, my dear friend Xavier RN. Hi, Xavi.
Hello, everybody. Hello, Max Quinn. I'm so excited to be here. My name is Xavier Obetsky-Noonan. I love The Bachelor. I just gave a squirrel a piece of bread and it straight smashed all of it. And I hate the coronavirus. And yes, as you heard, joining me as always is my co-host and my tight friend, Max Quinn. Hi, Max.
Hi. Before we go any further on today's podcast, we're recording on the lands of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation. We want to say hello and how are you if you're a First Nations Bachelor of Hearts podcast listener. Our respect to elders past, present, and emerging. Thank you so much for being here for the first into a new series here on the BOH pod. We are taking an exploratory look back in time at Catching Kelsey.
Right, we're going back in time into a sort of new world.
Say more.
Well, we are traditionally a Bachelor podcast,
yes,
as indicated by the name. We have been covering particularly the Australian version of the show for a long time, with some dalliances.
Every so often we branch out.
The left and right on either side, you know, like the wings of a football game.
Yep. Okay.
Giving people a taste of the dynamic where I'm the one who knows a lot about how football works and sports and stuff.
Here is the situation. Obviously, this makes sense for us to do. Taylor Swift is in Australia right now.
I am seeing her perform music in person tomorrow.
Her boyfriend is Travis Kelsey.
He landed on our fair shores today.
We do a podcast about reality TV shows.
And this is one of them.
It sure is. And look, there's lots of kissing ahead of us. We're
going
to get to know Travis Kelsey in an intimate way before he got together with Taylor Swift and the sports, music and media landscapes collided.
Today we are going to be talking just about, well, we'll talk about all sorts of things. We tend to go off on a bit of a tear.
I'm sure we'll talk about Taylor Swift at some point.
I imagine
probably
that'll come
rank
up,
her
yes.
albums.
Season 1, Episode 0, as I think it is officially called.
Crazy.
The Catching Kelsey preview special.
Yes.
Which aired weirdly like a month and a half before the actual season started. This is roughly 25 minutes in length.
In this episode, that's what you're going to hear. You're going to find out all about who this man is. You're going to find out about the context in which we arrive at this show, and you're going to get a little bit of what stands out to us as we start to dive into Catching Kelsey.
So we don't want to spoil the ending, but he does end up with Taylor Swift, but it is not on this show.
Somehow, no.
Yeah, that happens later. But we are very interested to see what we can learn about Travis Kelsey from watching this show. Particularly, okay, so the dynamic here is that Max, my co-host, is a lifelong fan of the National Football
League. More
than
20 years at this point.
Whereas I have never really been interested at all. I have occasionally seen it played in movies.
Mm-hmm.
My main knowledge of Travis Kelsey prior to the Taylor Swift... No, you know what? I'd never heard of him prior to the Taylor Swift
thing.
That's
crazy to me. This is a man who's been in my life for 10 years.
Right. Okay. And even now, I'm somewhat ashamed to admit that, like, the main things that I know about him are like those tweets that resurfaced that right. I had a good chuckle at, and like he's nice and people like him, you know, like, and he plays on the team. You know, we've done a little bit of talking about what I know about this, and just, you know, if you are listening along and you feel like you don't know anything about this guy, or you don't, you know, there's a lot more to learn, come with us on this journey, because that's what we're here to do.
You're in very safe hands, I got to say. This is a man who, as I said, has been in my life for a long time, who I have researched extensively both before and since his coupling with Taylor Swift. I am really looking forward, Xavi, to breaking down everything that is going on inside the mind of Travis Kelce as we explore his foray into dating 50 women from 50 states in the United States.
Uh-huh. Which is, let's not breeze past that.
Yeah.
Quite an undertaking.
Now, this man is dating women from Alaska.
Uh-huh. Keep going. Wait, you have to start with Alabama, I believe.
Anaheim.
Alamo is a place
I think you win that.
I don't know.
We're not good at this, but what we are good at is talking about reality TV shows.
Selective
in the context
knowledge
of...
knowledge and research.
Yes. In the context of The Bachelor in particular, so we will be applying a little bit about what we know from reality TV to this brand new show for us, Catching Kelce.
Brand new show from 8 years ago that nobody's really talked about.
I remember when this came out. I watched it.
Oh, is that right?
Okay. I watched at least the first couple.
Okay, yeah.
Because it was on the E! Network. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking, this is psycho that they've picked him.
We have covered a few TV shows from the past on this podcast before.
Uh-huh.
And one thing that I like to do...
Yes.
...in doing that is to sort of get us into the milieu of that time period.
Right.
Set the table, get the context so that we... You know, we're approaching this from a 2024 perspective, but it helps to remember where we were in 2016, what the world was like, what was going on, so that we can look at it through the appropriate lens and understand where this fits in context.
Also, a helpful responsibility for me to be able to delegate to you so that I can talk about the sports.
Yes, exactly. We're going to you're going to find over the course of this series that there are Max is going to be leading the charge. What?
Yeah.
Wait, what would you say in like an NFL? Like leading
the
play?
Leading the charge is fine.
You'll
running
be,
the play?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something like
I'm
that.
I'm going to be quarterbacking.
I think you will. And I have no reason to disagree. but I will be, on the bench? What? No, I'll be also on the team. I'll be the of the team.
Yeah, on the receiving end of passes that I throw to you.
Yes, exactly.
You'll be the Travis Kelce of the podcast.
Well, I mean, maybe we should determine that during our last episode. Like,
who truly was the
back,
Kelce? Yeah. Okay.
But let's just talk about 2016 generally.
Uh-huh.
Okay, Pokemon Go launched for the first time.
Hell yeah, still on my phone.
Okay, great. Yeah. Sport, let's not worry about it.
Mm-mm.
The UK voted in favor of leaving the EU, which
Brexit was
that year. This whole conversation about Brexit. So that's all happening. The Summer Olympics take place in Rio de Janeiro.
Mm-hmm.
This one's a little sad. A beloved gorilla named Harambe was shot and killed at the Cincinnati Zoo.
Oh. Why did they shoot? Oh, that's right. He attacked, didn't he?
There was a kid who got into the enclosure,
yeah.
And I think they were trying to protect the kid.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know if Harambe attacked necessarily, but that was just one of many celebrity deaths from that year, including David Bowie, Alan Rickman, Prince, Leonard Cohen, Carrie Fisher.
Oh, like, I remember this year.
Yeah, do you remember this year where like it was around the end of the year? They just kept happening.
Yep.
A lot of these were in December.
Yep.
And we were like, let's just get 2016 out of the way. Could it get any worse? And then years continued happening after that point.
Yeah.
The most popular TV shows around the world are HBO's Game of Thrones.
Okay.
AMC's The Walking Dead.
Uh-huh.
And of course, NBC's Sunday Night Football.
Yes.
Which is just like always a ratings winner. As the preview special that we will be discussing on this episode airs on August 28th, Cheap Thrills by Sia featuring Sean Paul is number one on the Billboard Hot 100.
I can't say I remember that one.
I'm just having fun tonight. Have fun, Cheap Thrill. It was before the real sharp downturn in Sia's, profile, you know? So that's number one for its fourth week. The last week it will spend at number one before a 12-week stint at number one, which will conveniently see us through to the end of Catching Kelsey by Closer by the Chainsmokers featuring Halsey.
Great song.
You know what? It's got one great note and it knows how to play it a lot of times in a row.
Exactly that.
Yeah. In the world of The Bachelor, bringing things back to the world that we know, ABC is halfway through airing season 3 of Bachelor in Paradise US, during which absolute dirtbag Chad Johnson.
Oh, Chad!
You remember Chad?
Oh, is this the thing with Chad?
Well, this is, yeah, so he was memorably removed from this season after one episode, or during the first, no, I think they stretched it out to a two-parter.
That's right.
After telling Chris Harrison to fuck off. Now, look, in hindsight, that makes him sound pretty good.
You know what? Go, Chad.
Chad was doing some bad stuff, though. he was not a great guy. We don't love him. He does porn now, though.
So, oh, good for him.
Yeah. I think he was one of the early US Bachelor people to join OnlyFans.
Makes sense.
Like, pre-pandemic, like, you know, really pretty early. So, you know, he's a land of contrasts.
Yeah. He was somewhat of a, like, he's like the adult film star who never grew up, you know?
I guess.
Like Peter Porn.
That is disturbing on a number of levels. In Australia, Malcolm Turnbull had just been re-elected. In a double dissolution election. What is this? Turnbull for what? Is that something? He handily defeated Bill Shorten's Labour Party. The census night took place in August, just before this episode, and it was intended to be mostly conducted online.
Oh, I remember this.
But the census website was unavailable for the entire night, which fueled this national conversation around digital security and, you know, what happens when everything's online and something goes wrong. You and I, Max Quinn,
yes,
were like halfway through our first season of the podcast. We were covering Richie Strawn in The Bachelor Australia. I was about to have the graduation ceremony for my Bachelor of Arts degree.
There you go.
And I'm playing in three bands.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what my life looks like. I'm getting enough shifts to cover my rent at JB Hi-Fi. It's before I stop getting enough shifts.
This is, you're in Melbourne at this point, though,
no,
right?
I'm in Sydney.
No.
Oh. But you, my friend Max, are in Melbourne.
That's,
I believe,
right.
This is like early to mid Melbourne, Max.
Yeah, like I moved to Melbourne.
In fact,
at
like,
the
yeah, tell me what your life looked like in 2016, if you remember.
I was overcoming a major depression. Yeah. So that was the large focus of my life. The other thing that happened to me in 2016 is that I got my cat, Jeff. And Jeff remains with us to this day. The rest of it...
Real
look,
background character on this podcast, if you listen closely enough. You know,
I am doing I'm doing radio for Triple J. I'm working at Triple J on Earth, discovering bands. We're doing the show. We're playing in bands.
That's right.
Did we tour with someone fun that year? Maybe we did the Jeff Rosenstock and Chris Farren tour that year
that
with
was
Camp
that
Cope.
Year. Yep.
Yeah.
We met the Camp Cope family for the first time.
Yep, that's right. I don't know that I have too much more.
American pop star Taylor Swift, you might have heard of her. She was having quite a big year. I mean, kind of every year is pretty big.
This
for
is
her.
Off the back of 1989, right?
Right. So she, you know, at the time of this episode, she had recently become the first woman to win Album of the Year at the Grammys twice, this time for 1989, which had come out the previous year. She is still kind of, I mean, she's kind of like winding up the victory lap of having done 1989, and it's before work begins on her next record. So there, it is a bit of like, you know, when you look up what Taylor Swift was up to, it's a lot of like personal life.
Right.
She had parted ways with boyfriend Calvin Harris earlier in the year. And I think she and Tom Hiddleston were having a thing around this time. But also like info on that is not super. Here's the point where I'm like, I love Taylor Swift's music and I have followed her career for a very long time. But I am not a historian of Taylor Swift in the way that certainly a lot of people are and probably some people listening are.
Yeah, if you're listening to this, I'm going to say that my recollection of what's happening with Taylor in 2016 is that this is the beginning of her villain edit.
Yeah, it's coming. It's rapidly coming, yeah.
This time is pre-Reputation, which comes out in 2017, my least favorite record by Taylor. So are you ready to do our official Taylor Swift album rankings?
Are you ready for it?
my least favorite Taylor Swift record is Reputation. I think that, so this is her last record with Big Machine, the Scooter Braun company.
Sure.
I think that there's a reason that this hasn't been re-recorded. I think that it will be left to last.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it will either get a brand new sonic treatment, or it will sort of like slither off into the distance as one that doesn't get touched.
Here's what I think will happen with Reputation.
Yes.
And no, you may not continue to list the rest of your favorite Taylor Swift albums. I think she is saving Reputation for a time during which her reputation has slipped again.
I will see. I think of Taylor Swift as like being Marvel or the New York Times.
Uh-huh.
You know?
But those things go through waves of public, you know, like Marvel is having a bit of a dip at the moment.
Yeah, I guess I mean, I don't engage with much Marvel discourse to begin with, but if you are saying that it is dipping, has it dipped before?
Because
I think Taylor's been through her dip, and I think it was Reputation.
Maybe you're right, in that, like, the dip that seems to be happening now has kind of been happening very gradually over the last couple of years since, like, Avengers Endgame.
Reputation is my least favorite Taylor record. What is yours?
My Reputation is also my least favorite Taylor record. And it's not an awful record.
No.
But I don't like it very much.
Yeah. Let's talk about Midnights, which is my second least favorite Taylor Swift record.
This is also my second least favorite Taylor Swift record. But really? It's also just like, it's recent. I was probably suffering a little fatigue when it came out.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, it feels like a kind of back to basics, you know, back to her strengths, but kind of like one of the less interesting ones to me.
It's the first Taylor Swift album that I felt was not risk-taking.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
What is your eighth?
My next one is Lover.
Interesting.
Another kind of recent one. Another kind of like... let's go back to what was making everybody happy before I did Reputation, you know?
Is it because of the, awful song that's on that album?
There's one or two real clunkers on there.
The one with
particularly the Shade Never Made Anybody Less Gay situation.
Oh my God, yeah. For me, it's Evermore.
Okay. Yeah, Evermore, kind of the sequel to Folklore.
Folklore, which I think is pretty beautiful, and there are some songs on there where I'm like, now we're talking.
Yeah. My next one up is Taylor Swift, self-titled.
Self-titled?
Yeah. Like, really? I like the songs. It's just like, at this point, actually, it just feels like it's just like too young. Like, it's just like, she was extremely talented at a very young age. She's doing a funny voice. I find it very charming. I think a lot of the songs are great, but I just don't reach back to it because I'm like, I would prefer to listen to an adult, you know?
I get it. These are four of the strongest singles in her catalog, dare I say.
Yeah, yeah.
Tim McGraw, Teardrops, Our Song, Should Have Said No.
Yeah, I agree. Totally great songs. Also, I think maybe part of it is that this album came out before I was on board.
Yeah, okay.
And so I probably like skimmed it the first time. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I just didn't create
some
a
of these
real
songs
attachment.
Were bonus tracks on the deluxe edition of Fearless, right. Which yeah. is the thing that I don't know. This is 2007 or 2008 when I'm working in a CD store and the deluxe edition of Fearless comes in and I'm like, what are these? Hello. Yeah, and yeah. So straight away I'm going back and that's all that I know at yeah, that time is yeah. those two records. So I will say that my next one is...
This is your...
Seventh?
Sixth? Seventh.
Is Lover.
Right. Yes. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. I will now go to number six. And it's not because I think it's bad, but because I think the others are way better, is Folklore.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Interesting. My sixth is 1989.
Oh, interesting. Say more about that. Why?
I think it's good, but I don't think it's like perfect. You know, like it's just like, I really love the next albums.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've seen some of the like production done better on other Antonov projects. I think like some of the songs that really work for some people don't work for me in the same way. I think Welcome to New York is like kind of a dud.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not going on record saying any Taylor Swift songs are bad because I think they're all great.
I think there are some bad songs.
Yeah. What else is on that album? I love Blank Space. You know, like, there are extremely high highs. And I think overall, it's quite a good cohesive pop record. I think also partly I was a little disappointed that, like, with Red, it felt like such a perfect symbiosis of, like, country and pop.
Yes.
And for her to then go fully, like, I'm not a country musician anymore. Or what, yeah. You know, like, what that album seemed to be sending that message.
Yeah.
To me, I was like, damn, you know?
That's how I felt at the time too, but over the years, I've come to embrace that as a statement.
Mm. No, you know what? Maybe 1989 I should put ahead of Evermore. I love Evermore.
Wait, so you haven't said Evermore yet?
I haven't said Evermore yet.
You haven't said Folklore yet?
No, I haven't said Folklore yet.
Oh my goodness. So you're up to number six for you?
1989 is my six, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Go on.
Five is Evermore, I think.
Okay.
The songs are not quite as strong. It is like, it feels like Leftovers. I don't think it necessarily was, but like... but I think that era of Taylor Swift is like phenomenal. The like lockdown, strip back, you know, Justin Vernon and fucking National, you know, all that shit. I think is so fucking good.
Yeah.
I think she should be that stylistically adventurous again and in more different types of ways.
It was lovely.
She should do a Scar album. she should do a drum and bass, just beats project, you know? so yeah, that's Evermore at number five.
And what's four for you?
I think it's Folklore, but like, honestly, Folklore could be higher on any given day.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, I love those records. I love Folklore.
The hits.
It's incredible.
There are so, so many good songs. I remember hearing The One for the first time on the day that it came out and just going, oh my God.
I think it really captures a side of Taylor that is not front and center in most of her other music.
Yeah.
And like, I love what she does on most of her other music, but like, to be able to be that deep in her career and like fully unlock a new like side of her, or like showcase a strength that was always there but never like given the full spotlight, I think is super super cool.
It's beautiful like aesthetically as a record, but then also like, I think it taps back in lyrically to the vulnerability that really attracted me to some of those first Taylor records. And so number five for me is the self-titled Taylor Swift. We've talked about it.
Uh-huh.
And at number four, Speak Now.
Max, speak now about why that's your number four.
So number four for me, because look, there are some really good songs here, but it didn't live up to my reputation. It didn't live up to my expectation of Fearless, which I think is one of the pivotal records of my music listening life.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's, I mean, that's my number three. Speak Now, I think, is like truly very great.
Mm.
But there's a reason it's three and it's not two or one.
So
what's your three?
My three is 1989.
Right, okay, so that's way, way up there for you.
I think these are unimpeachable pop songs.
Let me look at 1989 for a second and just make sure I'm not
being... Are you ready for this? Shake It Off.
Sure.
Blank Space.
Yes.
Style.
Style, I'm not crazy about. I don't love Style.
I just think it's a great exercise in melodic variation. Bad Blood. Not for you.
You know what? I maybe like Bad Blood more than a lot of Taylor Swift fans seem to.
Yeah.
But it is just kind of one thing.
You're right. One of the best songs in her catalog, I believe, Wildest Dreams.
Wildest Dreams is great. Wildest Dreams is really good.
Out of the Woods.
Yeah, it's okay.
It's okay?
It's like that Chainsmokers song. It's got one great note and they hit it a bunch of times and we're having a good time.
Sometimes that works for me.
Yeah. New Romantics I like.
New Romantics is really, really good.
Yeah.
And then
to be releasing an album with seven singles is seven truly singles
and
phenomenal.
None of them are Welcome to New York. Yeah. And you know how that goes.
Yeah. Wait, what? Oh, you're saying, well, it is track one.
Sure. But like, not a single?
That might be the Taylor Swift album I have listened to the most times.
Mm.
I wonder if that may be true.
Okay. That brings us to...
All You Had to Do Was Stay is a pretty good song. You know, 1989 is a good album. You know, Taylor Swift, good singer.
She's a good singer.
Writes a good song.
What's your number three?
My number three is Speak Now.
What's your number two?
My number two is Fearless.
Me too.
Fearless fucking rolls. I don't have a bad word to say about it, except that it's not my number one pick.
It's not my number one. The only thing that I'll say about it that dings it a little bit is that it's too long.
Interesting. And you're talking about the deluxe edition with the extra tracks?
Talking about the deluxe edition, but right. I think that there are a handful of songs
mm-hmm.
that we could do without.
Should we list them?
Okay. Fearless.
Because it's a 13 track album with 54 minutes in length.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean that's long. Yes. That's a long album.
Okay. Fearless is important. It stays.
Sure.
15 stays.
Got it.
Love Story has to stay.
Absolutely.
Hey Steven, Take or Leave, but I understand that it can stay.
It's gotta stay.
White Horse, I never liked.
Okay. I think White Horse is okay.
Mm.
But if you're trying to cut it, then maybe.
Yeah, like
if you're trying to cut something.
It's a dreary moment on a record that I otherwise have.
But then she swoops back in with You Belong With Me to lift great. Your spirits again, you know?
Such a great song. Breathe.
Flows well as an album.
Look, I think Breathe with Colby Calais can go.
I can't remember that song.
Tell Me Why. Nah.
Well, I guess I don't remember the second half of this album as well.
You're Not Sorry's great.
Yeah.
And That's the Way I Loved You is so good.
Oh, that's a good song. Yeah.
Forever and Always is great.
Incredible.
I think The Best Day is beautiful.
Really good.
And Change was a really important album closer.
Yeah.
I would ditch probably White Horse, Breathe, and Tell Me Why.
You're cutting it down.
Yeah. I think 10 songs is enough.
Yeah. I guess so.
That would make it for me. All killer, no filler.
Sure. Yes. Okay. Fair enough. We might be angering people with this. I wonder.
I don't care.
Number one record. It seems like we got the same one here.
It's Red.
Red.
Everyone that I like is involved in this record.
Oh, yeah?
Historically.
That's funny. I don't remember working on this one. I guess I purchased a copy of it. Does that count?
Okay. Jackknife Lee.
Mm-hmm.
One of the most inventive producers of all time.
This is the longest episode we've ever recorded,
Butch
by the way.
Walker and Dan Wilson. Two of my favorite songwriters
great, yeah.
are on this album.
Of course.
Max Martin.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously.
Yes.
Taylor Swift is on this
album. Oh, they got her? That's cool.
Okay.
Okay, here's a question for you. This album is significantly longer.
Yes.
Does it bother you? This is a 65-minute record with 16 tracks on
it. Okay, the only song I'd really cut is that stands out as a cut is Gary Lightbody.
Gary Lightbody.
The Snow Patrol guy.
Yeah. Yeah, I would skip that one too.
The Last Time?
Yeah.
I don't like it.
No, okay.
Okay, Sad, Beautiful, Tragic,
you know
I would
what?
Ditch.
I could, you know, here's what I would do, and this might be controversial.
Yeah.
I would make I Knew You Were Trouble just a standalone single. I would take it off the album.
Really?
Yep.
That's interesting.
Yeah. It so speaks to its cultural moment to me that
yeah.
I think the album might be more timeless without it.
Counterpoint.
Mm-hmm.
All Too Well is a better track 5 than it is a track 4.
I agree, actually. That's very true. And in fact, All Too Well is boosted by having I Knew You Were Trouble in 22 on either side of it.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Neither of which I Knew You Were Trouble in 22 are not in my like top 10 Taylor Swift songs, but the effect that they have on All Too Well, I think it's that's a really good point.
Yes.
It really boosts it.
Yeah.
Also, like, if we're doing Taylor Swift takes, All Too Well, 10-minute version, great to have on a record. I never want to hear it again, personally. I think you've messed with something that was truly perfect.
Yes.
In my opinion.
Yes.
I would prefer
to hear... Have we ever talked
about this? I don't know. We must have talked about this when it came out.
At some point. Like,
I know that on the Eras Tour, which I'm going to go see tomorrow, she's going to play the whole version, and everybody in the whole auditorium... What is it? A stadium?
Yeah.
We'll be singing along to every word in the, like, 600th verse.
Fuck the patriarchy. Fucking... Yeah, no.
And I haven't memorized it, and I'm going to feel a little out of place. During what might be, like... You know, top 3 Taylor Swift songs ever, you know?
Yeah. Look,
we're
I
not,
will say
we're
that...
not going to list... Not on this episode. We're not going to list our top Taylor Swift songs ever.
No.
Might happen down the line.
The 10-minute version of All Too Well is a top 10-minute song
yeah,
of all time.
I agree.
But it is so much fucking worse than the just over 5-minute version.
Yeah. Yeah.
A couple of things I don't like about it.
The extra 5 minutes.
Contributes to my hypothesis of Jack Antonoff being a ruiner.
Wow. That's a hot take.
Xavi, we've been on the longest tangent ever in the history of our show.
This is all 2016 context. It's
my
all very
God.
Important.
Do you have anything else from 2016 for me before we move on to me telling you about Travis Kelce before we then talk about the show.
Well, the last thing is that America, the great nation of the USA...
yes, the God-loving country, as we will soon hear it referred to.
It is gearing up for an historic presidential election. And, you know, by the time the season of Catching Kelce comes to a close, President Donald Trump will have officially taken office for the first time. So, like... we are charting, you know, as we continue covering this season, we will, you know, we will see the rise to power of, you know, and let's not forget he's America's reality TV president. You know, this is, it's important work that we're doing covering this stuff on our podcast.
And I think the specter of Trump looms large over the show.
Yeah.
Only in the way that, like, the very America first.
Yeah.
Presentation.
I don't think it would fly even 1 year after.
No, I agree.
And that's before all sorts of stuff had happened during Trump's presidency. But just like the way that you could assume if you're making a TV show that everybody watching at home is on board with someone being like an all-American guy or whatever.
Waving an American flag and going, America!
Yeah. And there's not even that much of that stuff.
No.
But like, whenever it does pop up, you're like, "Heesh, this is a different time," you know?
Right. It's a very different time, and I have some things to say about Travis Kelce that will paint him in quite a different light, I would say, to the way that he is being presented even on this show at this time. And so we've set the scene for 2016, but now let's meet the man. Zave, do you have any questions about Travis Kelce?
Can you tell me about him and, like, I guess, like, this point in his career? Like, how did this show, I don't know how this show came to be, maybe you don't really know either, but like, what are the circumstances around him that, like, out of any person in the NFL, you know, like, out of anybody, like, how, what do you think led to this?
This is the innate curiosity of it.
Hmm.
Because Travis at that time played for a team that was medium good.
Okay.
At a position that was largely unimportant.
Yeah.
And he was not the best person playing his position at this time.
Right.
So
he is not like the peak of NFL mountain right
no,
now.
No, definitely
know?
Not. He plays a largely unimportant, I would say, at that time position, although he is revolutionary as a player. And he does not hit the peak of his personal fame for another 2 or 3 years.
Well, I mean, the peak of his personal fame, I would say, is
oh,
now.
You're right. Yes, yes. The peak of his pre-Taylor Swift fame, let's say. So, I want to tell you about this man. And it's important, firstly, that you know that he was born in 1989.
Wow.
Very important to the Swifties.
That reminds me of an album that came out in 1989.
Yep.
By
Guns N' Roses.
I wish I could pull
Use
something.
Your Illusion 1.
Yeah, that's good.
That's what
good.
It was.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, measurables.
Huh?
This man.
Is that a term people use?
Measurables?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Is it legit, like an NFL? I've never heard
of
that.
Yeah, I suppose it's like a sports scouting kind of, like, what are his measurables?
Yeah.
How?
Not like measurements?
Nope.
Okay, I don't know what this word means, but okay. I don't want to stop you down on everything.
I love that you do.
Talk to me like I'm a baby.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to, so when I say measurables,
yeah,
what I mean is things that you can measure about him. And this is going to make sense in context. Okay.
Are we talking dick length?
So
it's not that kind of podcast. Okay.
This man is 6'5", 250.
Hang on.
What that means.
Is that his?
That's his height and his weight.
Oh, full body height.
Okay.
Not his dick height.
He is...
And it's not... I'm telling you, we don't... It's not that kind of thing. And I don't really stand for that kind of... Like, I don't like to work blue. I prefer to work red like the Kansas City Chiefs. Hmm?
He is 6'5", 250.
He is 6'5" tall, and he is 250 kilograms in weight.
Pounds... What that means is that he is 1.96 meters tall and 113 kilograms heavy.
Okay, so he's like a Zave type.
Classic Zave type.
Yeah.
His hands are 24 centimeters wide.
Wide?
Like, oh, his, like that's outstretched? His hand span. Like, yes.
Like wingspan of the hand? Okay, yeah. Oh, that must be good for catching big ball.
That's right. And this man can run 18 meters in 2.7 seconds.
Wow.
Could you count to three for me, please?
Okay, well, firstly, I would begin with one. Two would surely follow.
He's there.
Wow. Yeah, that's impressive.
He's quick.
Because I didn't even get to three.
You didn't get to three.
And he I was running really fast that whole time. Mm-hmm. You know what? 18 meters? That would take me all day. I'd be stopping for lunch halfway through.
But can you imagine how fast that is?
It's unbelievable.
For a man of that size.
Yeah, that's true. It's wild. And he's wearing all this gear and shit, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So the way that this is measured is an event called the NFL Combine, which they refer to as the Underwear Olympics.
Oh, so this is without gear.
Yeah. I'm going to tell you about the position that he plays.
Okay, yes. So we've used this term a couple of times, tight end. I know very vaguely what it is.
Okay.
But like, because I don't really understand the sport that he plays, the names of the positions are kind of just rolling off my back like a duck in water. And
so
stuff,
I want to start with this. Tight end is an offensive position. In the NFL, your team's offense plays the other team's defense and vice versa.
That makes sense.
So Travis Kelce only plays on offense.
This was a big question I had because I know there are different positions for defense.
Yes.
And like there are turnovers, right? Like, the, yes. You know, they'll be much like in rugby, which I've ever seen.
Interceptions or fumbles.
Right. I guess I think I maybe know what those are, but like,
okay.
Your team is going offensively until you are forced to not.
Yes.
But when that happens, he just fucks off?
Yes.
Okay. Right. Yes.
That's
okay.
Right. So he's on the sideline so you saw, for example, have you seen the meme of Travis Kelce pushing his coach?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, actually, no, I haven't seen it as a meme, but I saw it on the broadcast.
Right. Okay. So this happened during the Super Bowl.
Mm.
And the reason that that was not allowed to happen, but that that was facilitated was because he was obviously on the sideline because the other players, the defensive side of Kansas City, was on the field.
Right.
The offensive side was off the field.
Got it.
So at that time, he can approach the coach and just push him.
Yeah.
Let me make this as simple as I can for you to explain what this man does.
Okay, great.
I want you to imagine a letter T.
Okay, so
capital T.
Skinny line. I'm sorry, I'm making
long
this
line.
Yeah.
And then I want you to imagine that on the outside of the letter T, there are two dots on either side.
Okay.
All right. We are going to think of these two dots as what you might consider like the wingers in rugby.
Yeah.
They're called wide receivers.
Okay.
Then you have the T itself. We've got the two dots accounted for.
Yeah.
And the T is formed up of the, let's say the horizontal line of the T is formed up of what's called offensive linemen.
Okay.
And so and those like guys a bunch are of those, right? Blockers.
They're pretty, yeah.
Yeah. And then the vertical line of the T is comprised of a quarterback and a running back.
Okay.
Now, none of this accounts for the position called tight end.
Right.
Because what I want you to do is imagine that there was an extra dot on the horizontal line of the T, right at the end.
Even beyond the other dots?
No. He basically lines up at the end of the offensive line.
Listeners, hello. I'm just editing the podcast now. I'll put a diagram to go out with the Instagram, so you can find it on Instagram and see what we're talking about.
And so his job is to serve as either a blocker or a catcher.
Right.
That's what a tight end does.
So is the idea, because some people are mostly blockers and some people are mostly catch, or, you know. Like,
yes. So, and he's the one sort of like jack of all trades in between guy.
Right. Okay.
The offensive linemen block, the wide receivers catch. The tight end can do either.
So the idea, I guess, is you need to get somebody who is like pretty good at everything.
Yes.
But not the ultimate best at any one thing.
That's right.
Okay.
Okay. And so tight ends have traditionally had these two responsibilities. And in the NFL, for a really long time, the lean was towards you have to be a good blocker first before you're even a good catcher. Because right. we have other guys who are good catchers, but what we want to do is give the ball to the man who's going to run the ball. We want to make sure that the quarterback can throw the ball.
Okay. So I guess the idea is like you just need to be like a wall of muscle kind of thing. Like
exactly that. You need beefy. To be a 6'5" and 113 kilograms.
Okay. Yes.
Right. As he is.
Yeah.
Right? But so athletic is Travis Kelce that he became this big catching weapon for his team. And this has seldom happened in the NFL.
Right.
There are like, I don't know, 6 or 7 guys in the history of the league who have been as good at catching the ball as athletically from the position that he plays as Travis Kelce is.
Right.
And so he's like this revolutionary chess piece on the football field because he is too fast for the little guys who cover the other little guys on the defense.
Oh, yes.
To tackle.
Yeah.
Like he's too...
He just plows through him.
Plows through him. He's too big.
Yeah.
And then he's too quick for the big plotters who try and tackle the quarterback to get to as well. So he's like this joker in a pack of cards. He is this jack of all trades who, if you get one of these guys, can change the face of how you do your passing game. Because he is so unique.
He's a catch.
He's a catch. And that's why we're catching Kelce. Okay. So does that explain roughly what
he does?
It does,
yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Good. Now.
And it also explains like why he's so, he's having this moment. I mean, even though in 2016 he has not like fully achieved his potential in the way that he would go on to do in the NFL... it still explains why, like, there's a lot of buzz around him and he's signing this big deal. And because this is how this this episode starts. It's like he, you might have this in your notes, but like
he. So the preview episode, he signs a 5-year contract with the Chiefs after being drafted in the 2013 draft. So this is a couple of years after that happens for $45 million. This is not the end of his earnings.
Does that money go to him?
Yes.
Okay, I heard them say, like, he signed a deal worth $45 million, and I was like, what does that mean? So he gets that money.
Well...
Well, I mean, like, his agents and shit take a cut.
Like, there's agents and stuff, but it's prorated.
But it's not like he is worth $45 million to the NFL, but they, you know, like, whatever.
He No. His salary is $45 million, so long as he doesn't get cut along the way.
Yeah, yeah.
So in sports... You sign a player for X amount of money, but if they stop being good a couple of years into the length of time that you've signed them for, then you might be able to cut them for a... It's like when you get made redundant.
They'll have a severance fee of some kind.
Yes, there's severance, yes. So, but basically, even if he didn't make the full... $45 million from that deal.
Yeah.
He at least gets something like on that deal it was like $13 million
he's
guaranteed signing.
Yeah.
And then the rest is prorated over the years. It's what's called a signing bonus.
Okay.
And so he has since signed another 4-year $56 million deal.
Okay.
So after that deal, he then got paid, so instead of $9 million a year, something closer to $13 or $14 million a year.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
So closer to my salary.
Right. Closer to what you make, what I make, what most of us are.
What we're pulling in from the podcast. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly that. Yeah. So that's the position that he plays. That's the salary that he earns. I want to talk about the 2013 NFL draft.
Sure. So, yeah, this is when he is plucked from, you know, college.
His college.
From, like, I mean, I wouldn't say relative obscurity because obviously college sports are an incredibly big deal in America.
Uh-huh.
But, like, this is when the NFL takes notice.
So, Kelce was selected 63rd overall in the 2013 NFL draft.
Okay.
By the Kansas City Chiefs, the team that he still plays for.
Yeah.
And he was selected by the coach, Andy Reid, who... His brother, Jason Kelce, used to play for when Andy Reid was the coach of a different team in Philadelphia.
Oh, okay.
So,
wait a minute. Is it the Eagles?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
So, both the Kelce brothers have played their entire careers for one team. That's quite rare.
Yeah.
It's because they're both extremely good.
And they're loyal.
They're loyal boys.
Taylor.
We like this very much about them. But what we don't like is that 62 people were selected in front of Travis Kelce in the 2013 NFL draft, which is widely regarded as one of the worst drafts of all time.
Oh, okay.
So the 62 people ahead of him, not all dead shits.
Can you, just for my, and I don't want to talk about this for too long, but
yeah.
How many are there in total? Like, is it 63 out of
252.
Okay, thank you. Yes.
Good. Yes. So it's 63 out of 252, which is like you're one of the 63 best college athletes in the country at that time. But the thing with Kelce was that he had really only come on as a pass catcher at his tight end position for 1 year in college. Prior to that, this man was suspended for a whole season. Can you guess why?
Is he a bad guy now?
Travis Kelce smoked marijuana once.
I'm so relieved. I was like, uh-oh. Are we doing a whole podcast about someone who did like something very serious?
Absolutely not. No, this man smoked marijuana once. He got busted on a drug test and they suspended him.
Yeah.
So different
while
were the-
While he was in college.
While he was in college at like
and
20
sure,
years old.
Trying to be a promising young athlete or whatever, but like, yeah, okay, yes. Wow. He was suspended for a full year?
They suspended him for a full year from the University of Cincinnati.
Holy moly.
For smoking marijuana once.
Wow. Because obviously it would have, what? Oh, it's just, yeah, it's just against the rules. I was thinking like, oh, it's not like it's performance enhancing necessarily or whatever, but it's just, it was a crime, I believe, at that point.
Yeah.
And it's probably against their school charter or whatever. Yes, okay, I understand.
Okay, so there are like seven.
Even though it's cool and it makes you look cool. Weird.
There are seven guys from the 2013 NFL draft, I believe, who are still, like, considered actively good players.
Okay.
Of those players, Kelce is by far the best. He was not the first person picked at his position because there were, at the time, concerns about his character.
Oh.
Because of the marijuana suspension.
Sure. He smoked weed once, so he's a bad person.
Yes.
Yeah.
I am reading, in fact, cribbing, Kelce was flagged by NFL.com, the website of the NFL, where basically every year for the NFL draft, they'll list like who's eligible and what do we think is good and what do we think is bad about them.
Mm-hmm.
And so his bio for the draft in 2013 is this. Kelce has been a tremendous blocker throughout his career, but elevated his game as a receiver in his senior season. He isn't a tremendous athlete, beg to differ, but he does a lot of things very well. It's a deep tight end class, but Kelce's play suggests he should be highly sought after. So they say, ideal frame, athletic for his size, but then they say, doesn't have blazing speed, not an explosive athlete, and the main weakness for Travis Kelce, the reason that he was selected 62nd instead of higher, suspended for an entire season for violating team rules.
Right, so that's very non-specific, and it's like, yeah, instead of being like, he smoked weed once, it's like, he does not respect the rules.
Yes.
He does not respect authority.
Yes.
He is morally impure.
Shocking.
Yeah.
Okay. I have one more thing to say about the 2013 draft.
Please.
Do you know about Manti Te'o?
No.
Okay.
I don't know what
that is. This was a huge story and scandal when it happened. Do you know about the dead girlfriend hoax?
Not in those terms. I don't think so.
Okay. I'm going to read you a headline from Deadspin that was published in 2013 that changed the landscape of professional football.
Great.
This is it. Manti Te'o's dead girlfriend.
Okay. That's a person's name.
Yes.
Got it. Sorry, go on.
The most heartbreaking and inspirational story of the college football season is a hoax.
Ooh, That's juicy.
Okay. In this same draft as Travis Kelce, there's this guy called Manti Te'o. He plays the position of linebacker for the University of what the Americans call Notre Dame.
Yeah, they love that shit.
I found out why. I was very curious about why they call it Notre Dame.
Yeah, go on.
So it's a largely Catholic university. And over the years, it was a university that was populous with Catholic priests. And so instead of, as we might pronounce it,
Notre Dame,
to your Irish would say Notre Dame, you see.
Oh, Irish.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
So that's why it's called the University of Notre Dame. And this man, Manti Te'o, was like their best player. And there was this heartbreaking thing that happened to him in the December before he was eligible for the NFL draft in April. And that thing was that his grandmother and his girlfriend died on the same day.
That's tragic.
It's tragic.
That's...
It was all over the fucking media.
Yeah.
Mega.
I mean, yeah, an unbelievable loss.
As it turns out, he was catfished.
Whoa. How does that work?
Well, so there's a documentary about this.
Do you
on
think
Netflix
someone was his grandma
watch.
This whole time or something? Or what? So I'm not trying to be willfully obtuse. I don't really understand.
No, he thought someone was his girlfriend this whole time.
Oh, right. So his grandma did die.
His grandma did die.
Okay, very sad.
Sad.
Yeah.
But then...
Girlfriend, what? He just never met? Or?
Girlfriend was someone that he met on Twitter and turned out to be, many, many years later, a participant in this Netflix documentary about them, which I would encourage that you watch.
Wow, yeah.
As a queer person who was experiencing quite severe gender dysphoria decided to catfish Manti Te'o, one of the most famous collegiate football players in the country.
Wow.
And essentially, it's the story of how these two people got in way, way, way over their heads.
Yeah.
Then this girlfriend killed herself off.
Wow.
As a character in his life story.
Did she know that his grandma had died?
Yes, that's why she did it.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So she was pulling the like catfish cancer card, and then when his grandma died, the person pulled the pin.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Hectic.
Yeah.
He went 38th in that draft, and Travis Kelce went 62nd.
Yeah, interesting.
Kelce,
It's not his fault.
It's not his fault, but it certainly tanked his draft stock. He was expected to be maybe a top 15 pick, and he didn't last very long in the NFL. Because there was so much baggage to come from this. It's a fascinating documentary that is on Netflix. I'd really encourage you watch it because it would put not only the sport, but the level of fame that these athletes who are 22 years old, as Travis Kelce was when he came out of university, it puts it in context.
Yeah, for sure. 22, Taylor Swift song.
22. Let's keep going with Travis Kelce stuff.
Yeah.
In 2023, he was the face of an ad campaign for Pfizer to encourage Americans to become vaccinated against COVID-19.
Oh, so I heard jokes about this in the wake of the Super Bowl because I saw people being like, now every American has to get vaccinated forcefully. Or I don't know what the jokes were because I didn't know what they meant at the time.
Well, so he's in a Pfizer ad, basically.
Right.
And he's the face of Pfizer at the moment being like, get vaccinated.
Uh-huh.
Which is fucking sick.
Sure. Yes, absolutely.
This is the man who...
Particularly, I guess, in America.
Of the Catching Kelce preview, season 1, episode 0, that we're about to talk about, where he's standing on a boat shouting America, waving an American flag.
Yeah. Like, the iconography of that... from our 2024 perspective, does not seem to line up with the iconography of someone being pro-vax.
Right, exactly. Right. And so this vaccinated man who, one of the worst people, in my opinion, in the NFL, Aaron Rodgers, a rival quarterback for a different team. You know about him?
Whose brother ended up with
Jordan Rodgers.
Yeah, who ended up with JoJo from The Bachelor.
Okay. Do you know anything about Aaron Rodgers? This a is a separate bit. Wormhole for a us to go bit. Down. Okay, do you know that him and Jimmy Kimmel are in a big fight?
No.
Great. Okay, I've got so much to say about that as we go on.
How did their wires cross?
This story dates back to 2020.
Yeah.
The coronavirus is sweeping the globe and is also...
apparently, according to some people.
According to some, and according to some, including Jimmy Kimmel.
The plandemic.
Right, okay. Mm-hmm. One of the people who might have believed in the plandemic was Green Bay Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers. Mm-hmm. He's one of these Joe Rogan podcast bro types.
Okay.
And he's now... Now, look,
we love podcasts.
We do.
I don't know how wide that extends, you know?
And so basically what had happened in the 2020 season is that journalists who had access to Aaron Rodgers had said, Aaron Rodgers, are you vaccinated?
Cool.
And he said, I'm immunized, yes.
Oh, interesting.
Couple weeks later,
yeah.
Aaron Rodgers was ruled out due to COVID-19, which you can still obviously catch if you are vaccinated, but yeah. The timing of it and the length of time that he was ruled out made it clear to everyone that he was in fact not vaccinated,
right?
But instead was doing ivermectin.
Oh, sick. Okay, cool. Yeah, right. What a sick guy.
Yeah. And so this is the origin story of the feud between Jimmy Kimmel and Aaron Rodgers, because Jimmy Kimmel then went on his late night show and said, can you believe this man lied to the press, said he was immunized against COVID-19, and in fact, he's just been doing the horse paste.
Sure. He made some jokes about it on his comedy show.
Okay. 4 years later, Aaron Rodgers is on a show called The Pat McAfee Show, which we will definitely touch on at some point later this season.
Okay, great. I think it's such an interesting, like, this season is going to be such a window into, like, America and things that I don't know about.
Okay. There's this man called Pat McAfee. He used to play a very unimportant position in the NFL called punter.
Okay.
His job was to kick the ball.
Kick man.
Yes, he's a kick man. And he was particularly personable. And do you know what Barstool Sports is?
I've heard of it.
Okay, it's like bro-y right-wing sports content.
And I was so brave when you said the name of another sport outlet earlier.
Yeah, yep.
I just want everyone to know that I'm being brave.
So Pat McAfee had a show on Barstool for a while, and now he has a deal with ESPN because there's a particular type of man who, let me say, Pat McAfee is like the Joe Rogan of the NFL.
Okay.
And Aaron Rodgers is a weekly guest, one of the most famous and best quarterbacks in the league, a weekly guest on his show.
Right.
One of the things that Aaron Rodgers spoke about quite recently during his guest spot on the Pat McAfee show was the Epstein list.
Oh, that's good. Can't wait to hear his thoughts on that.
Aaron Rodgers, during his appearance on the Pat McAfee show, this is the man who Aaron Rodgers makes fun of Travis Kelce for being pro-vax and getting vaccinated and being the face of a Pfizer campaign.
Uh-huh. Probably too woke.
Went on this Pat McAfee show and said that he is going to pop bottles when the Epstein list is released and suggested that Jimmy Kimmel would be named.
Ah, cool.
Resulting in this tweet from Jimmy Kimmel.
You know what's interesting is like, I'm sure America does have like defamation laws, but like, we're pretty small fries, whatever, but like we tread pretty lightly when we're talking about like anyone for any reason.
Like,
and in America, it's just like freedom of speech.
Yes.
Above all else in any interpretation that you want to.
The ways in which freedom of speech defies defamation in the US are like, it is beyond my comprehension.
And I don't think that Australia's defamation laws are like always good or like, you know.
No, I agree.
They're actually kind of
I think they might
bad,
be limiting in some ways.
For some people. It's fascinating to just have an insight into this.
So Jimmy Kimmel says, "Dear asshole," with two A's for some reason. For the record, I've not met, flown with, visited, or had any contact whatsoever with Epstein, nor will you find my name on any list other than the clearly phony nonsense that soft-brained wackos like yourself can't seem to distinguish from reality. Your reckless words put my family in danger. Keep it up and we will debate the facts in court at Aaron Rodgers 12.
Great. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift.
Mm-hmm.
The most all-American proposition that you can probably think of. The country singer.
Yeah.
And the star athlete.
Yeah. It's the prom king and queen, you know? It's like...
Yes. They're the prom king and queen. And somehow... On the far right of the US, they are representative of villainy.
Yeah, that is interesting. That is quite interesting because they're extremely... Well, I don't know a huge amount about Travis Kelce, but Taylor Swift, to a fault, is like extremely apolitical and like has opened up a very tiny amount more over the last few years.
Definitely,
but like,
has leaned left.
Yeah, but like center left.
Yeah.
One thing that stopped me from being an extremely huge Taylor Swift fan for a long time was the fact that she was like extremely determined to be as apolitical as possible in the way that like it's the same, you know, it's not her on her own. She's not an island in this. But
these
like,
are reputation managers who are responsible for this, I would say.
Sure. Yes. But also, you know, like many other pop stars or whatever, you know, many other extremely successful people, the reason that they're able, well, one reason that they're able to be massively successful is that they don't piss off any, you know, potential slice of an audience or whatever, right?
Is there anything else that you want to know about Travis Kelce before we continue into what stood out from this preview episode?
I'd like to know, how did the Kansas City Chiefs,
yes,
the team that Travis Kelce plays for,
yes,
how did they perform in the Super... Well, they probably weren't in the Super Bowl. I probably would have known that. How did they perform in the season prior to this show?
So, they made the playoffs.
Okay.
But 12 at that time out of 32 teams made the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Every year. And so they sort of
above
like
average, but
snuck in above average. But the thing was that they didn't have a quarterback at that time who you could really set your watch to.
Okay, right.
They were quarterbacked by this man who's a very nice man and was the first overall pick in an NFL draft himself. In fact, the draft that Aaron Rodgers was also selected in.
Interesting.
Called Alex Smith.
Mm-hmm.
And Alex Smith was super good, but wasn't an elite talent.
Yeah.
And so what had happened is that in this year, the Chiefs have made the playoffs. They've fallen short. They have not won in the playoffs. And the Kansas City Chiefs trade up in the draft to select a young man by the name of Patrick Mahomes.
Right, who goes on to be their superstar quarterback.
Yes. That's right. So Patrick Mahomes is... to the extent that Travis Kelce now might be considered one of the top 2, 3, 4 players at his position of all time, Patrick Mahomes is the same.
Yeah.
The difference is that Mahomes is a quarterback and the quarterback is the much more important position.
Right.
But the chemistry between Kelce and Mahomes is what has propelled this team forward, both on the field and off in an identity sense.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, because if you have, like, iconic players, it's very easy. Like, you know, it's like, obviously, people liked the Chicago Bulls in the 1990s because they were winning a lot,
yeah,
but also because of the personalities.
Right, you've got, you know, Dennis Rodman.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That's who we're talking about.
That's who we're talking about.
That's right.
So the thing here is that the Chiefs also, for a little while, had a man named the Honey Badger, was
Stop
also
it.
Drafted
wait,
in...
Wait, wait, wait. Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Yeah, yeah, the? I know. Not this honey, not our honey badger,
right, okay,
but a man who I knew as the honey badger before I knew the Australian honey badger as the honey badger.
Right, yeah.
Tyrann Mathieu, his name is. So he was on the team for a little while. They had a man who beat cancer.
Mm-hmm.
His name was Eric Berry.
At NFL?
Yeah, yeah, on the NFL team.
He beat cancer at NFL?
Oh, my God. At NFL is... I have like, to- that's how you start... a complainative sentence on Twitter.
On Twitter, yeah.
And they also had this man called Tyreek Hill. And the particularly impressive thing about Travis Kelce is that for a while, this man Tyreek Hill was considered the best receiver on the team. And the Chiefs, because they got so good, they won one Super Bowl with the combination of Mahomes, Hill, and Kelsey.
Right.
But then they had to get rid of Hill because he was too expensive.
Oh, okay, right.
And so after that, Kelsey has stepped up to become this whole other dimension of NFL pass capture.
Yeah.
Like, this whole new... we all knew that he was good, but at 34 years old, for him to be doing what he is doing, there are a few other 33, 34-year-olds in the NFL who are capable of the same feats of athleticism and who have sustained their success for as long.
Well, they haven't put me in. Maybe they should.
You know what?
About
maybe this time you'll go to the NFL draft.
I'm untested, which I recognize they may see as not a good thing.
A flaw.
But it's kind of Schrodinger's cat right now, right?
Have you ever smoked marijuana? I don't know. Yeah.
How do they feel about just making edibles? Because the smoke makes me cough. Okay.
Dear. Okay. We got to talk about the show.
Yeah. Let's talk about
the show. There's 20 minutes of a preview show of Catching Kelsey. We are so far into this.
We are a bit. Yeah.
Let's talk about what stood out to you this season on Catching Kelsey.
Okay. So I have only watched this 25 minute thing or whatever. And there's quite a lot going on. It moves quickly. They're cramming in a lot of background information here. I would recommend, even if you're not going to follow the rest of the season, maybe check this out.
Yeah.
Just because it'll give you like a good overview and you'll get like a bit of a taste of his personality as well. And we learn a little bit about what his life is like. And, you know, some of it is like aphorisms about like, well, the key to my success is perseverance. And, you know, my fans keep me real and that kind of thing. But we're also getting a glimpse into like what this period in his life really looks like.
Yes.
There is an astonishing moment that happens less than 3 minutes into this first episode. Well, this zeroth episode.
What astonished you?
That stopped me in my tracks.
Oh, I want to know more.
It's during this part where he's talking about like, you know, there's a little bit of like rags to riches, kind of like they're talking about his childhood.
Yeah.
They're talking about like the immense success that has kind of come out of nowhere over the last little while.
Him and his brother. Yes.
Yes. All this stuff. And it's like his life has changed very abruptly. And now he's like in the inner circle of the NFL. He's going to all these events. He's like living the high life. And he says that he, quote, flies a private jet everywhere. And that for me was just like, it was tossed off so, because it's like, of course he does, but like just because that is so much a part of the Taylor Swift discourse over the last like year or so,
yeah.
I was like, that is astonishing.
If I can put that into context for you, the team probably flies a private jet to
games. I'm sure you're right. And even like, I'm not against Taylor Swift using a private jet for some stuff. Like, obviously, you know, like,
let's be realistic
or whatever. It's just, it was very funny to me that that was like one of the first things I learned about him.
Well, I think it was important for the storytelling for them to be like, he lives this glamorous life. And at that time, the way the Kardashians talk about a PJ, you know?
What's a PJ? I don't know.
Private jet.
Oh, yes. Okay, yes.
Right?
Yes.
Like, this is a drawer in 2016. Ooh, it's luxurious.
Course. Yeah, it's very like, you would like to live this life. But it's also like, part of it is like, wouldn't it be cool to live this life? And like, if I get to date him, then I get to do all this cool shit. But it's also, and this is part of this preview episode, is like, you, as a prospective partner for him, have to be prepared to step into this world. And to go to these things, and like this, I'm sure this will continue being part of the show as it goes on.
Yeah.
It's like, how can you adapt to this lifestyle?
And so the thing that stood out for me was that this is probably 6 degrees of separation, maybe, from the life that he is stepping into with Taylor Swift.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it?
Well, my thought was like, this man sort of knows what it is to be quite famous.
Yeah.
With that said, Kansas City is a small city.
Mm. There is a whole other world that he is like,
right.
Now like a member of.
I would say that Travis Kelce is like NFL famous in the way that maybe 50 other players are. But at this time, the time that he's talking about it, the way that maybe 150 other players are
yeah.
in the whole league.
Yeah.
To go from like, I mean, now he's one of the handful of 10 faces of the NFL.
Yeah, he's probably one of the, like, probably 20 most famous people in the world right now.
Maybe, yeah.
Well, I don't know,
like,
exactly.
To break into that echelon is a whole step up.
Yeah.
But, like, well, so in terms of his pure fame right now, do you know what Tom Brady looks like?
No. I mean, I could, you know, he's like a white guy with brown hair, but, like, whatever.
Right, exactly. But you know much more intimately what Travis Kelce looks like.
Sure. Well, I watched his TV show, but yes.
Yeah. Okay. The distinction, the shaved head years later, he's doing much better for himself in terms of the way that he looks now. The 2016 fashion is another thing that stood out to me here.
That's true, actually.
He is particularly well-dressed now.
I don't think of 2016 as like a period. You know what I mean? Like, if you make a period movie that's set in 2016, it's not going to be that different to right now.
Mm.
But also, like, you really feel it when you're watching something from that time.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Just the shirting that they put him in, the big cardigan.
Yeah, yeah. And I notice it a lot in the women's fashion and styling and stuff as well.
Definitely.
So, yeah, we get this intro on him. We're learning about his brother is introduced here, who we haven't talked about very much. He's not super relevant to this episode.
No.
And, like, I'm hoping, because he makes a really strong impression here.
Their dynamic is so good.
He is introduced as a, quote, nasty 300-pound big bearded offensive lineman for the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yes.
Which I like all of those adjectives.
Yes.
He's also introduced foot first. They, like, pan up from his foot up to his face.
Yeah.
And he's telling the camera, like, zoom in on that big toe. And he's talking about how his feet have been stomped all over because he's fucking, you know.
Well, so let me complete the picture for you.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about the T before.
Yes.
Jason Kelce lines up in the absolute dead center of the T.
Right.
The position that he plays is called center.
Yeah.
And one of the plays that he and his quarterback, Jalen Hurts, are most famous for is called the tush push.
Cute.
The idea behind this play is that you need, like, 1 meter.
Yeah.
And all of the other players line up behind the quarterback, who is lining up behind Jason Kelce, who has the ball and gives it to him. And then they push each other forward.
Right, okay.
Jason Kelsey's job
just
is to end up
brute strength.
Brute strength on the bottom of this absolute fucking dog pile.
Yeah.
Every time this team wants one single yard.
Yeah.
He has one of the hardest jobs. There's a quote from him where he says, I scream every time we run that play. He and Travis are so personable. And I think that really stands out. Their relationship is so genuine. Their parents, Donna and Ed, are equally affable. And their podcast listeners, if you're interested.
Oh, yeah. I keep hearing about this podcast.
It's called New Heights. It's been going for like 3 years. I listened to it. It's good.
Mm.
It's a fantastic way to get insight into the NFL, but also a fantastic way to get insight into, like, the lives of these two particularly fun men.
I can't recommend another podcast, unfortunately. This is the only NFL news source. Travis tells us a little bit. He says, like, he goes for the wrong girl, but we don't really get, you know, like, this is his dating history. There's not a huge amount of that, like, table setting. It's more about, like, what his life looks like right now. And then, like, out of nowhere, he says, so I got the opportunity to date 50 women from all 50 states, which is staggering.
It's a mystery to me why the E! Network chose him. His parents aren't connected is the other part of this. Like, his dad is a steel mill worker. Mm. His mom, I forget what her job is, but it's blue collar.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand out of everyone, he was the person who was selected.
Yeah, the 50 women from 50 states things feels to me like a format that they had kicking around. Kicking, so to speak.
Definitely.
Just something that they slotted him into.
Yeah.
But it is, yeah, we don't really know exactly how it ended up being him.
Okay, what stood out to you? What else stood out?
Okay, the number one thing that I took away from this, you will probably think this is not a very good observation, but I'm going to talk about it a little bit. The thing that struck me the most is that this is a show about Travis Kelce.
Yeah.
And what I mean, you know, as I was watching, I was sitting and thinking about what it would be like if Travis Kelce was The Bachelor.
This is it.
Well, here's the thing. I don't think that, I mean, look, there are a lot of ways in which this is similar to what that would be.
Yeah.
But I think the things that I particularly like about this show are the things that probably wouldn't happen if Travis Kelce was The Bachelor. I think this show is better than what it would be if it were a season of The Bachelor where he was the lead. Season.
Yes.
Sure. Because I think, obviously, it's not just because there are more women involved, you know, and that, you know, that offers its own...
Has its own dynamic,
potential
yes.
dynamics or whatever. But I was struck by how the presentation and also the characterization were not interested in trying to fit Travis Kelce into some kind of mold.
Yeah.
Or making him assume some role or take up some mantle or whatever.
Oh, that's they really interesting.
Trying to convince us that he was, you know, some type of thing.
He doesn't have to be anything other than Travis Kelce.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you know, there is a humor and playfulness that is baked into this episode of TV.
Yes.
And it is truly structured around his personality,
mm-hmm.
his lifestyle, at least at this, you know, in 2016, this current moment.
Yeah, because he's a goose.
He's a goose. He's a kind of freaky dude.
He's a silly, like, funny goose.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, like, if it were him being Bachelor, it would be a more muted portrayal of him. And, you know, that might lead to something interesting in the sense that, like, when you try and fit a square peg into a round hole.
Right.
Whatever ends up happening turns out being interesting.
That's the premise of someone being The Bachelor, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, like, I think in contrast with that, we are getting, like, I don't know, like, the fact that this is its own distinct thing.
Yes.
It is just a handful of episodes.
Yes.
And we're going to kind of just follow where it leads us.
Yep.
That's really intriguing to me.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you know, it's not all upside. I think, like, in contrast to the quite well fleshed out depiction that we're getting of Travis and the pretty good idea, like, I felt, you know, as somebody who doesn't know a huge amount about him,
yes.
I felt like these 25 minutes or whatever were very, like, well put together to make me really on side with him. I did not really feel that that was the case with the women that we met on this episode.
I agree.
I think, honestly, and look, this is a time thing.
Yeah.
It's a 25 minute episode. It's also a 7-episode season.
Yeah.
So it's like, and there's 50 fucking women. So it's like, they were never going to come out of this, like, with the kind of really, like, holistic sort of 3-dimensional portraits of, real human beings that we typically really appreciate.
Right.
In reality TV. But these are, like, some of the most sort of 2-dimensional.
Oh.
Like, caricature almost, you know, we've got a woman who loves, whose whole thing is she loves being Christian.
Yep.
We've got a woman whose whole thing is that she loves, makeup.
She wants, one woman wants to have babies. One yes. woman is a virgin.
One woman, like, we've just her gone, whole like, thing
is your thing.
She loves recycling.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, I like her.
I mean, yeah. Look, I don't have a problem with any of these archetypes. And I also think, like, there is, as much as it's kind of reductive, there is, like, a real efficiency to the communication.
Oh, without a doubt, yes.
Like, there are times where I've been really disappointed by the characterizations of people on a reality TV show where I look back and I think, like, oh, this is all we ever really learned about this person or whatever. And that's over the course of, like, 6 episodes or yes. something. You know, like, there's plenty of time where they could have developed something else and we only ever really learned one thing. At least in this case, we're kind of only learning one or two things about these people, but it's within, like, a minute or two of screen time.
Right, exactly.
I think, like, they're communicating that very clearly and, you know, like, and, like, they're the same kinds of arguably somewhat problematic archetypes that
yep.
we talk about. You know, like, there's a daddy's girl who yep. calls herself a daddy's girl.
Oh, we got to talk about her.
Yeah, well, maybe let's talk about her. What did you okay. think about the daddy's girl? The daddy's girl, the interesting thing about her...
Yes.
I couldn't tell you her name or where she's from, but her dad...
Yes.
...of whom she is the girl...
Yes.
...is a fan of Travis Kelce.
Okay. Even more than being a fan of Travis Kelce, he is a former NFL football player
right.
and league commentator named Mark Schlereth.
Okay, so you know this guy.
I know this guy because yeah. he's, like, well-known on TV, and he used to have a syndicated radio show
right.
for which he was known by his nickname.
Oh, okay.
So it was called Sedano, who was the other guy, and Stink.
You gotta be kidding me!
This man, Stink's daughter, is on this show.
Holy shit, that's cool.
Yeah.
Well, it's totally separate to this, although completely amplified by this.
Yes.
I was bewitched by this man. I really liked him. And he's not on screen for very long.
No.
But here's what we get from him. He's like, yeah, you know. I mean, because here's the thing. I'm kind of expecting the daddy's girl archetype with the dad who is going to disapprove.
Yes.
And I think that's even more played out and tedious than what we get here. But the thing that I like, A, is that he likes Travis and, like, is on board and is supportive of her. But also, I don't know if you've registered this, the t-shirt he's wearing?
No, I missed the t-shirt.
He's wearing a t-shirt that says, "You talking to me?" Which, already good. But the best part is it's got, like, it's like a distressed sort of aged kind of look or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's got big tire tracks all over it.
Yeah.
And I just, like, I've never really seen that. And I thought, like, I don't know, this guy could be, like, a new style inspo for me. Like, not just, I mean, obviously movie reference on a TV show. Yeah. I got plenty of those. But, like, looking like you've recently been run over.
Yeah.
That could be a thing.
Oh, the Stink constantly looks like he's recently and run over.
And he's the Stink. It's like, maybe he literally was run over and he's like he's just made his way back home in time for the shoot. But he's like, smells of fucking burning rubber. He stinks. He's, yeah, it's
okay,
all over
so
him.
I did some research into this. The Stink is from Alaska.
What? Okay, yes, go on.
All right.
He's from Alaska, which is like just after Alabama, but just before Arkansas.
Yep, just before, okay. So in Alaska, sometimes the native people of Alaska, if it was a particularly brutal winter, would be forced to, in the olden days, eat dead fish.
Okay.
Which were called stink heads.
Yeah.
During Mark Schlereth's rookie season, he told this story to a bunch of his teammates who were much older, and they said, "We are going to call you from now on the Stink." And it stuck.
Hell yeah.
The Stink stuck. and the Stink has had a tenured career as a football analyst. I think he still works for Fox Sports 1.
Okay.
He was on ESPN for a while before he got fired. He's been fired from a bunch of places.
Yeah.
But the only controversy that he has really ever had in his career, have you noticed his hair?
I don't think so. It seemed pretty normal to me.
It's pretty normal, but it's also very, like, sprayed into place.
Right, okay.
And at one point, he went on an ESPN morning show, nationally syndicated, so all around the country, and he said, "My hair is like a plastic Devo wig. My hair will survive anything. The Holocaust? Boom.
Ooh.
I mean, the kind of apocalyptic event? Boom. My hair is going to be okay." He then went on to apologize. "I apologize for a verbal blunder on at Mike and Mike. I used the word Holocaust and quickly corrected myself." Sorry if I offended anyone.
Hey, I mean, look.
It's not that you used the word. It's the context that you used it in.
I would say
Stink.
So. Yeah. That's very interesting. Well, yeah, we'll keep an eye on this. We'll keep a nose on.
We gotta look at Stink's daughter through this season.
Yeah.
I also, the other thing that stood out for me this episode was the girl with the hands.
Talk to me about the girl with the hands. I don't remember.
Now, there is a shot of a girl who is lying in a bunk bed. It's on the, like, this season.
Uh-huh.
And she has little miniature
hands. Did see that. Yeah, what's going on with that?
So, don't know.
You know, the listener, for if you're not familiar, the little, it's like a small version of a hand that you might put on the end of your finger.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
This girl had 10 of them.
She had 10 of them.
And then she was like tentrilling them together like Montgomery Burns.
Very strange behavior.
I
love it. It's honestly kind of iconic, but yeah, I don't know what led to that. I would love to see some context for it.
I'm sure there will be much more for us to take away from Catching Kelsey moving forward.
Yeah, it's gonna be very interesting. I promise that our future episodes will be slightly more structured than this.
Yes.
I did a little extra research. I don't know where, I didn't have a chance to bring this up, but I was doing some research on IMDb and just looking into the people who made this show.
Oh, yes.
Because it's an E! Network thing. We haven't covered any E! Network stuff in the past. And I was like, oh, I wonder what the overlap, if any, is with other shows that we've covered.
Well, so the only E! Network famous show that I really properly know is The Kardashians.
Right. I think I'm probably in the same boat. There might be shows that I've watched where I didn't really know what network
they were on or whatever.
Other than
like
the
True Hollywood Story or the, oh no, the Bunnies of the Playboy Mansion. I saw some of that.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
yeah. That was an E-Network show. But outside of that, yeah.
So as far as I could tell from IMDb, there are basically no overlaps with the people, you know, between the people who are credited for working on this and the stuff that we've covered in the past or, you know, the world of The Bachelor at large, with the exception that three or four of the casting people who are credited for Catching Kelsey would later go on to work on Golden Bachelor.
Oh!
And, like, quite interestingly, not on, you know, Bachelor or Bachelorette, at least as far as I could tell.
Yeah.
From a very cursory Google, I might be proven wrong. But, like, Golden Bachelor popped up, and that made me quite curious, because I'm like, it's quite different, like, demographics or whatever. Maybe it's on, it could just be, like, this is a casting agency.
Is the heart of the show the same?
Well, I wonder. I wonder if we can expect the same sort of kindness and the same sort of, like, let's go girls kind of attitude, you
know? Geriatric. Geriatric antics.
Mm-hmm.
How do we make that joke?
We did make that joke a few times. Yeah, right. Probably as soon as it was announced.
Thank you, listeners, for paying as much attention as I did.
Yeah. This episode that we're recording right now is the last episode that we will be recording before I go and see the Eras tour.
Yes.
And before, which I think Travis Kelce may well
be supposed to be here.
At?
Yeah.
He's definitely in Australia and in Sydney. Maybe he's just going to go
Big Dog's coming to the show.
Play time zone while she's doing, you know, whatever. So I expect he will be the guest on our next episode.
Yes. If you can line it up, that would be fantastic.
I'm going to, you know what? I thought about this. I was like, I was like, oh, can you bring an audio recorder in? You can't bring an audio recorder in. But like, if there are any Swifties who look like they want to chat about this, I've got my phone, you
know. Let's go.
See if I can get some on the ground reporting.
Do
or
you
whatever.
Want to borrow one of my Rams hats?
Would that help, do you think?
Probably.
You reckon?
Here, have this one.
Do they know who the Rams is?
They'll know who the Rams is.
What if they ask me a question about who the Rams is?
You say my podcast co-host loves the Rams and was at the NFL draft with Travis Kelce this year.
I just don't know if, like, the best move to... I'm trying to put them on my headphones, and that's not happening. I don't know if the best move is to approach wearing a hat of an opposing team.
The Rams and the Chiefs have no rivalry.
Oh, okay.
They're in different divisions. They played one game, which is widely regarded as one of the best games of all time, maybe 5 years ago, and they haven't played since.
I'm worried that now we're going to start talking about the Los Angeles Rams for quite a while.
Oh, we can't talk about this.
Listeners, this is going to be an interesting series. I can tell from how this episode has gone. Our next episode we'll be covering episode 1, which is about an hour.
Yep.
In which 50 women are narrowed down quite a lot.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's almost insane how brutal the cuts get off the bat. So we have that to look forward to. You can of course find that episode in this feed where you're listening now.
Yes.
If you'd like to keep up with us on social media, I'm hoping we can find some good things to post about this show. I have a feeling...
I'm sure we will.
There's a lot going on. I'm tweeting about Kelce. Nobody's looking at him. Nobody uses that website anymore.
That's all right.
Head on over to social media. You can find us just about anywhere at BOH Pod.
Mm-hmm.
You can also join the discussion on our Facebook group, which is called Bachelor of Hearts Osh Posting, in which there are many like-minded folks, listeners, previous guests.
People with their own opinions about Taylor Swift.
I would love... Yeah, well, I'm speaking directly to the people in that group now. Tell us what you think. You know, what's going on?
Yeah.
That's too broad. Do we ship Telsey?
Telsey.
That's not it. What is it? What are they calling it?
Traveler?
Kilsey...
It's got to be Traveler.
Let us know what it's called. Traveler's quite good, isn't it? If you'd like to support the show, you can find us at patreon.com/BOHpod. You will get, as a bonus, some episodes from the past.
Ancient history.
And perhaps some episodes from the future. I can't promise that. We'll put out another one pretty soon. I think it's going to be a fun time.
Yeah, I'm really excited to watch and talk about this.
I think, you know, more of what I had to offer, more of what Max had to offer. Let us know who's your favorite. Not a good idea.
Not a good idea, listener.
Did this go well?
I think this went great.
Good. Yeah. I always feel a bit this way at the end of an episode where I'm like, is my life a lie?
Is things good?
Yeah.
Is things good?
Things is good.
Yeah.
We hope things is good with you as well, dear listener. As I always say,
go on.
Shake it off.
That's right. At the end of every episode of the Bachelor of Hearts podcast, Xavier Urbetsky-Noonan is known for saying the classic and trademark phrase,
trouble, trouble, trouble. And Max, of course, your sign-off, as you always say, is...
I had the best day with you today.
Oh, that's actually quite nice.
It's quite nice, yeah, isn't it? Well, really listener, good. Until next time.
We love you.
We love you.
Goodbye. Searching for a sign to lead me to the end of the rose. I know we found love, following my heart so blindly, hoping that this path will lead me to the end of the rose. Oh, oh, oh. Lead me to the end of the rose. Oh, oh, oh. Lead me to the end of the rose. All my life, I've waited for years, hearing your voice, music to my ears. From the first moment you entered my life, just one hope.